Welcome to The Procurement Show.
Hello, and welcome to The Procurement Show, the show that tackles the topics we all need to think about and sets out to explore the more interesting bits of procurement. I'm Jonathan O'Brien.
And I'm Paul Philpott, and this episode is going to be a terrific one.
Because this is our special edition of The Procurement Show.
Now, we've had lots of questions into The Procurement Show about the changes that President Trump is making in the US with regards to tariffs, but moreover, what it means for procurement, how it drives the decision-making processes that us as people in procurement need to make. So we thought we'd do a special episode. We don't normally give away the date that we're recording these things. We are recording this one on the 14th of March, and the reason why I make that point is anything could happen since then.
The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, unlocking the hidden value with your most important suppliers.
So everything we talk about today could have been out of date.
Completely out of date and totally irrelevant.
So many of the things that we're seeing play out at present have significant implications for anyone in procurement or supply chain functions right now. Also, there's a lot we can learn about negotiation, so there's a lot we can talk about.
But I think it's really important to say before we go any further that we don't have any political bias or opinion in any political direction here. We just want to look at the fact, what is happening to economics, what is happening to the procurement scene, and what it all means.
So where should we start?
Tariffs.
Yep.
Tariffs have been grabbing headlines globally, and it seems that the concept of what a tariff means might be something that we perhaps don't know.
Yep.
So we've seen new trade tariffs, plays to bring other countries into the US, tactics indeed to end wars, stock markets plummet, other parts of the stock market and investments reacting in other ways too, I think it's fair to say.
Yep.
A lot of headlines. So what does it all mean for the global situation, and should we be worried about something that's changing so frequently?
It certainly has a lot to think about in terms of the global situation. Should we be worried? Hard to tell, because the thing that we can be certain of is everything's uncertain here. Nobody actually knows what is going to happen. So there are lots of forecasts, lots of predictions, but we just don't know. So that's point number one. I think the other point to remember is there are bigger strategies at play here. So this is like a big game of chess. So whilst on the face of it, it may look like all sorts of random things are happening, that's not the case. This is an orchestrated, planned series of things that are happening to get to a new point. And it's all about power. It's all about access to resources, especially minerals. And it's also about ensuring that US borrowing becomes much more affordable. So there's a number of things at play here. So the first is financial markets and what we're seeing on financial markets. We saw the India stock market take a slump. We've seen the US dollar weaken to pre-Trump levels and further slumps since then. It's easy to think a lot of these things are consequential. Well, I think there's a much bigger picture here, because right now what President Trump needs to do is he needs to tank the US economy momentarily. If you look at the current debt that the US has, it currently has around $7 trillion of debt. That debt needs to be refinanced in about 6 months' time. Currently, if President Trump was to refinance that, the rate he would be borrowing money would be about 4%, which would cripple the US. So to get interest rates down, what needs to happen is markets need to show weakness to grow. And the signs of that is when investors stop investing in stocks, stop investing in companies because companies are not growing, and they switch those investments to bonds. And that's starting to happen now because the Federal Bank determines the interest rate. It's separate. President Trump has no control over what is happening there. So he needs the economy to take a dip in order to be able to get inflation down to renegotiate that debt. So that's the first thing. So we can expect some difficult times in the US, and that'll have ripples across the entire world economy. The second bit is we're seeing a kind of new world order here. So if we go back to the end of the Second World War, then there was this kind of new world order that came out of that, this post-war set of rules and alliances that were all set up to treat countries equally. And there's a thing within that called the Most Favored Nation Clause, and that's about having relationships and alliances. Now, what's happening here is that's being torn up. And for the first time in 75 years, we are going to a new order of things where it's not about those alliances. It's about who has the power. So we're seeing some unexpected alliances. Indeed, if you look back to the UN, in March, America sided with Russia and North Korea against Ukraine and Europe, which was probably more of a posturing than anything else. But the hierarchy that's emerging from this is very different. It's about who has the power, and the person, the country, the entity with the most power will be number one. And clearly, America is looking to use its superpower status to be able to turn that into profit. That's what's playing out here. And number three will be those parts of the world that have resources to sell and are ready to do a deal. Okay, so this is all about resources. This is all about access to resources. As part of that, democracy will take a step backwards. Because if you're going to have that level of power, it needs to be unconstrained by democracy. So not necessarily in the US, but in other parts of the world, and we're already seeing this with the increase in more authoritarian nations worldwide, democracy is going backwards. Freedom on a global level is going backwards. So we're entering this global phase where things are going to be pretty uncertain. Mm-hmm. Everything's going to be shaken up. Prices are going to rise. Tariffs will spiral. We'll talk about that more. Inflation will be back. And the world's going to become a more dangerous place. And the world will suffer. America will suffer and become weaker short term. The question is, what's going to happen long term? And that's the bit that nobody knows. So right now, it's time to plan for an uncertain and a little bit lawless time. You know, that's what we're facing.
So when you say short term, do you have any expectation of how long short term looks like?
I don't. I think for at least 6 months.
Yeah.
It's going to be challenging, probably even a year. The question is what happens after that? And that really depends on what's playing out now in terms of tariffs and sanctions, how the rest of the world responds to that, and how this kind of new world order settles.
Okay, and I'm going to ask you a few questions a bit later on about the global fallout from all of this, because it is going to cause ripples, as you say, in ramifications. But what I don't want us to do is carry on with the conversation like many news agents and outlets do, assuming a certain amount of knowledge, okay, about tariffs and what it all means. So I'm going to ask you to explain a few points. Tariffs and sanctions.
Yep.
Two headline-grabbing topics. Can you explain the basics of what they are, what it means, and the possible consequences when these two things are changed?
Sure. So a tariff is essentially a tax on either imports or exports. And usually it's done as a percentage of the goods. So if you're buying something for $100 and that's being imported and there's a 20% tariff on that, it's going to be $120. A sanction is more an economic and diplomatic coercion tool. So it's to shut down imports or exports, or it's to encourage a company to act or refrain from doing something. So right now, there's sanctions in place with Russia and Iran, for example, by the UK, by Europe, by America. I know this just recently. We were doing some work with a big company who wanted to run some training, including some training and access to our Proclius platform in Russia for a group in Russia. And we had to look very carefully at it, and we couldn't do it because we would have fallen foul of the Russia and Iran Sanctions Act here in the UK, which is a whole list of things that you can or cannot supply to Russia.
Right
now, most things are prohibited. So that's the difference. And currently, there's actually something like 15,000 US imposed sanctions now around the world. It's gone up from about 10,000 in the last year or so. And also, we've got this scenario when now the US imposed tariffs are either threatened or are active. So we've got goods from China into the US 20%, Mexico and Canada 25%, steel and aluminium 25% tariff on steel and aluminium coming into the US. We saw just this week a 200% tariff on whiskey and spirits from the EU. But there's already been tariffs. These things aren't necessarily the only tariffs. Solar panels going into the US, there's a 50% tariff on that, which was brought in by the last administration. Now, in the US, imports account for about 40% of what the US buys. It's something like $3.3 trillion worth of imports. So tariffs are impacting about 40% of that right now. So that's the difference between what a tariff and a sanction is. But coming back to what I said earlier, there is a much bigger strategy at play here. So why are tariffs being imposed? Well, in tandem with needing to get interest rates down, what President Trump wants to do here is bring things back into the US. By imposing tariffs, what he's effectively doing is saying that low-cost manufacturing that is happening in Mexico or in China or in Canada or somewhere else in the world. Actually, he wants that back in the US. So he is changing the globalization agenda, which has been the thing that has powered the economy, the global economy, for many decades now, to a localization agenda, bringing it back to the US. And there's a good number of strategic reasons for wanting to do that. It gives much better control over the US economy, but it also gives much more security of supply. So one example here would be chip manufacturer. So the majority of the chips that we rely on, that the US relies on, are manufactured in Taiwan. Of course, Taiwan, there is this threat of China invading Taiwan that's kind of hung in the background for quite a while. So what the US has been doing is looking at bringing chip manufacture back into the US so it has control of these things. So there's lots of drivers behind this. And the message that we're hearing from President Trump right now is there's going to be this short-term pain, these lumps and bumps, but long-term gain. That's what we're hearing. But
there's always a but.
There's always a but. If you put tariffs on goods, there will be retaliation. And we're starting to see this. So retaliation, if you put 20%, I'm going to put 30%. It's that kind of thing. So what happens is you get this spiral of global tariffs.
And a tariff war.
Yeah, absolutely. A tariff war. Both China and Russia are now imposing sanctions. China has, interestingly enough, imposed a sanction on Norwegian salmon. Nothing to do with tariffs, but this was after the Nobel Peace Prize was awarded to the Chinese dissident of the late Li Xiaobo back in 2010. That action triggered a sanction from China. So you get this kind of retaliation, not just in economic terms, but just because one nation doesn't like what another nation did. And when you get that spiraling of tariffs, people look to new people. Countries look to new countries. So if everybody's not playing nicely in the sandbox, people get out the sandbox and say, hey, can I go and play with you on the swing? Mm-hmm. And that's what we're seeing right now. So, you know, we might see something like Canada now forming a trade alliance with the EU. And we're also going to see some other impacts here. If we come back to the what's happening in financial markets, for example, as the dollar weakens, which is what we're seeing because the markets have slumped and have shown concern about the impacts of tariffs. But as the dollar weakens, of course, the cost to import increases more. So we don't only have the impact of the tariffs for goods being imported into the US, but we also have the added poor exchange rates, which are increasing costs even more. And it gets worse because you have some goods which go over that border multiple times. So for automotive, for example, there are goods which are made in Mexico. They come into the US, they get part processed into something, they go back into Mexico, and they come back into the US again. So you've got tariffs both ways each time those goods cross the border, which just becomes unworkable. So what's going to happen is we can expect inflation in the US short term, and we can expect costs to rise. The analysts are suggesting that the short term, the cost in the US to the average household will increase by about $2,000 per year. And we'll find out next month in April if US GDP falls. All the predictions are that GDP is going to fall for the first two quarters of this year. Why? Because suddenly there is an increased cost and companies cannot do anything about it easily. You can't just pivot and relocate your supply chains from Mexico or Canada or somewhere else into the US.
In a moment, I'm going to ask you about how procurement needs to react and respond and how this is most certainly keeping the function on its toes. I want to go back to the definition of tariffs. President Trump himself has referred to VAT as being a tariff. I think those of us in the UK don't necessarily look at VAT as being a tariff with regards to our everyday consumer approach. It's a tax that's charged to the consumer at the final point of sale. Is VAT a tariff? Is it being treated as such?
Well, President Trump is referring to it as a tariff because he wants to give a comparison. So one of the plays here, one of the justifications is currently it's unfair. So you have tariffs when you think the exchange of trade is not fair. And so there's a tariff to rebalance that. So that's one of the arguments. In actual fact, it's not true to say that because for VAT, it's not just paid on the imports. You pay on the imports. We pay in the UK on the use of the goods. So it is actually fair. So there isn't a comparative example there. It doesn't compare directly with a tariff, no.
I've been looking up the notice periods for tariff changes and how organisations with regards to procurement need to prepare for such notices of change of tariff. If we are to believe the news agenda that we must certainly get on this side of the Atlantic, some of these decisions are being made very quickly and the tariff changes are happening quite literally overnight. Apparently, legally, that is entirely possible and that can indeed happen. Do you believe this is the case with some of these decisions? And if so, how does procurement keep on top of this? And what are the ramifications of something that's changing so quickly with regards to how you operate in this field?
Sure. So they can change very quickly, of course, but the practicalities of responding to that means it actually takes quite a while just to respond to a tariff change. So there'll be a catch-up just doing that. But you said if these tariffs happen, and that's a key thing because there's a lot of posturing going on here. We're going to talk about negotiation in a bit and what we can learn from negotiation. A lot of this is conditioning to say, I'm going to do this. Now, the big question here is, will all of these tariffs be applied? Because not all of them have yet. And if they are, how long will they be applied? Because by applying a tariff, it compels the countries that you're trading with to want to have a conversation. It gets you to the negotiation table. So there is a real strong bit of negotiation conditioning going on here to say, we're going to do this. One of the things that President Trump's negotiation style and his team behind him, and there's a lot we can learn about how much of this is playing out. One of the concession tactics that we see, it's like me saying, I'm going to cut your arms and your legs off. And you go, oh, no, don't cut my arms and legs off. And I say, OK, I'll just take an arm. And you say, oh, thank you. Here's my arm. You know, it's that. So you start by saying, I'm going to do this real. I'm going to take it to this point. And then you come back and people will give you something. And there's a bit of that happening here as well. So the reality is we don't know if these will stick. Because in economic terms, they probably can't, because supply chains can't just pivot to respond. So what people are doing right now is they're just watching and getting ready. We'll get into some of the detail on that in just a moment.
And I notice you're referring to various negotiation terms. You're using the term conditioning, whereas some people might use the term threat.
Yeah, again, when we talk about negotiation, we use polite word. We talk about conditioning, not threat. We talk about a bluff, not a lie.
All right, so let me ask the question, will there be any upsides?
Well, let's hope so, because I think there will be, actually. I think there'll be a whole bunch of new opportunities for those that seize them. And it's very easy to think, oh, whoa, everything's falling apart here. There's a lot of upsides at a global level that will come out of this, as it always does when you shake something up. This is a bit like one of those snow globes. You pick it up, you shake it, and it all goes crazy for a while, and it settles. The big, giant globe that we're on right now has just been given a shake, so we're just kind of waiting to see what happens. It could be good for Europe, because, you know, right now, China's being rejected by the US, so they are hungry to find new markets for Chinese stuff. So there's potential, actually, as supply chains change, actually, that's going to have some real beneficial effect on other people that import from those territories. I think, as I said just now, we can see something like Canada and an EU deal. Mm-hmm. I think that could happen pretty quickly. The other thing, we haven't talked about the wars yet, but we will. We'll come back to that. Defense spend. Defense spend is about to go stratospheric. It's going to be the biggest growth industry in the next 5, 10, 20 years. And that's going to be huge. That's going to have huge growth potential for the UK, for Europe, for the US as well. Yeah. We'll be right back in just a moment.
Report, Captain Bywell.
Sir, we've recovered one.
What? A Proclius?
Yes, sir.
Good work, Bywell. Where did you find it?
That was easy, sir. We looked at the companies with good strategic procurement. They all use Proclius. Look, I've got it here.
Quick, man, open it up. Aha, it's got toolkits, category management, SRM, sustainable procurement, and look, red sheet negotiation.
Here, sir, an academy with a skills assessment and a virtual learning environment.
Great Scott, this thing has Capella too. It can create category strategies for you.
And Ruby, sir, the AI negotiation co-pilot.
Bywell, you'll get a medal for this.
Proclius, the AI-powered platform for strategic procurement. Search Proclius or visit positivepurchasing.com to find out more.
The
what, if anything, can procurement be doing to mitigate tariffs?
Well, what you need is a magic wand.
Right.
And then it all goes away.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, seriously.
But if you're in procurement right now, if you know The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy here in the UK, it's a very English thing, don't panic. That's the first thing. Don't panic.
And also just sit on a towel.
Yeah. This is actually potentially a really good opportunity. We're going to be pretty busy in procurement, but actually this is going to be an exciting time because everything's going to change.
Yeah.
So there is a bit of game playing you can do, and this will happen sort of short term. So tariffs, you know, often you'll have a tariff on something, but it'll be different on something else. And there's all sorts of examples of this. I think it was Nike, one of the big sneaker manufacturers, they introduced a new sneaker that had a special layer of cotton in it. And by introducing that extra layer meant it was not classified as a sneaker, but it was a running shoe or something like that. And it fell into a different classification, which meant that the tariff was only 7% instead of 12%. So there are little games. So you can expect people to be offering some quirky things to get around tariffs. That's sort of short-term gains, and those loopholes tend to get closed pretty quickly. The second thing is, let's assume tariffs are for real, because they may be gone within a month or two. But let's assume that they're real. What we need to be doing is preparing for price hikes. Mm-hmm. So what happens if there's going to be these sudden spikes in the cost of bought in materials? Well, we're going to get the organization coming to procurement saying, we need to cut our costs now. What are you going to do about it? So we're going to be going back to the suppliers, asking the suppliers to absorb that. They're going to be going, no, can't absorb that. And we're going to be doing some hard negotiations, and we're going to be working closely with our suppliers to figure out how we can get costs down, who can absorb what. So that's the first thing. Lots of big negotiations. Right now, we need procurement people who really know how to go in hard and do some serious negotiating. Prices will rise. Prices to the customer, to the consumer are going to rise. Companies are going to cut costs to make savings elsewhere. So we're going for a difficult time in terms of headcount reductions and other cost areas being slashed. And margins are going to get squeezed. So what procurement now need to be doing is preparing for how you are going to mitigate price hikes as much as we can. How do we do that? Well, let's do the basics. Got to go back to the contracts we have in place. And if we think about what happened in COVID, then a lot of contracts were literally ignored and thrown out the window when this happened, because people said, well, you know, unusual circumstances. I know we had a contract, but actually we're going to have to break the contract because otherwise we're not going to survive. We're going to be seeing a bit of that, people breaking contracts. So we go back to the contract and we'll have to renegotiate some stuff, or we'll be forced to renegotiate because the supplier will be saying, I'm going to stop supplying you until we renegotiate that. So there's risk there. PESL analysis. It's kind of procurement 101, but it's one of the most magical tools we can use to be on top of the external environment that we're sourcing from. Do it and update it every week, because PESL is your friend right now. If it's something that you haven't referred to since you did that procurement training, then you need to dust it off and get it out, because that'll really help. And we need to analyze which suppliers are going to be affected by how much. Now, this is interesting, because if a supplier is saying there is a 20% tariff, which means my goods to you need to go up by 20%, then instantly that's got to ring alarm bells. So if they're putting their prices up by 20%, the first question is, what percentage of the goods to you represent bought-in goods and materials? So let's say it's 40%. So actually, it's not 20%, but it's 40%, so that's a much lower number. It's an 8% increase. And if of that 8%, let's say 25% relates to the goods where tariffs apply, then actually it's a 2% increase. So we've got to understand the breakdown and how much is actually impacted by tariffs. It's an easy thing to miss as well. And this is where we need really good category management. We need to go and look at our category strategies, go back to that fundamental make versus buy. Up until now, the right strategy has been to buy, to outsource, to go to lower cost countries to establish the sources of supply that would give us the most value. That has changed. So we need to go back and be doing hard, fast category management to look at what's the next strategy for the next 5 or 10 years, assuming tariffs stay. Part of this will be about restructuring our supply chains. We're going to be looking to change marketplaces. Again, that'll come out from doing really good category management. We may need to incentivize our suppliers in a whole different way. and we're going to be renegotiating. So category management and advanced negotiation are the two things that procurement teams need to be doing for their strategic and their most impacted areas of spend. But the big question is, do we act now or do we sweat it out? What I think we do now is you go and you do that analysis and you figure out a strategy and you figure out how you're going to pivot if tariffs stay, but you're ready to switch back if tariffs don't stay.
Is procurement, generally speaking, agile enough to cope with all this? Because it seems... Well, okay.
Sorry, did you want to finish the question?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I have this fear, and obviously you clearly do now, that procedurally, procurement is quite a hard-coded thing. I was looking about actual physical systems that need updating when a tariff is changed. ERP procurement system, customs and trade compliance systems, contract management, supplier agreements, pricing, sales systems, supply chain logistics adjustments, and all the derivatives of each of those areas of systemization. And then you have things being brought into a tariff agenda that were never part of a tariff before. How is the function going to cope?
It's not able to do that. Procurement functions aren't typically very agile. The things you described are the transactional things, and that's the easy bit. So there's a lot of work to do there just to update those systems. But those are just the systems, so actually an order can be placed and goods can be supplied. And that's just about a bunch of admin people doing admin stuff. The real challenge is how you have an agile strategy. And we're talking about potentially needing to completely change entire supply chains, completely change where stuff is made, completely change perhaps what we source. And so if you imagine if you're, I mean, let's go back to the automotive example. You're an automotive company with your final assembly in the US, but most of your parts are made outside the US. Typical scenario. You can't just pivot and next week be sourcing from somewhere else because, I mean, let's say a wiring loom. Let's say a wiring loom that's manufactured in Mexico perhaps comes to and fro across the border. To do that, you've got to find a new facility in the US. Maybe there's somebody who already does that stuff, but that's not going to have the capacity because everybody else is going to be piling in there. So you've got to set up a new factory. You've got to set up tooling. You've got to then set up the inventory and the logistics to do that. You've got to bring people in. You've got to train them. You've got to overcome the issues, the teething problems that you have. That's 6 months if you were really lucky, probably more like a year, probably more like 18 months to do that. So bringing things into the US as part of what President Trump's vision here, that isn't an easy pivot. And that's where we potentially have the issue here, because strategically we can think about what we need to do, but it's a much bigger journey.
Okay, so you've looked at the automotive. It's a really good example. So fundamentally, this is going to change where stuff will come from and what global supply chains will look like.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we just talked about the supply chains into the US. So ultimately, if tariffs remain, they will end up in the US, but 1-2 years down the road at least. But again, some of these new trade alliances, so EU and Canada, for example, China and the EU, some of those alliances will drive new opportunities there. Raw materials. And we've talked about tariffs into the US. China has been putting export tariffs on its resources for quite a while now because this is all about resources. A lot of what's happening here is about future access to resources. Resources are running out. The key resources we need for the future are getting scarce. For the tech industry, for the future of EVs, for the future of energy, we need a whole bunch of minerals, and some of which are getting scarce. A lot of those exist in China. So China has long since been protecting itself with export tariffs to keep its resources. The other thing that China has been doing is it's been buying up whole swathes of bits of the world that has resources. And a lot of this has happened under the radar. People haven't seen this. So in Africa, for example, China owns, I think, 15 of the 17 cobalt mines in the DRC in the Dominican Republic of Congo. Cobalt, of course, one of the key minerals we need for battery production going into EVs. And also China has established and built ports and shipping routes around the world. The infrastructure. So that's already been happening. What the US is now doing is saying, we need to do the same. And so in a way, the US is slightly late to the game here. And so when you hear President Trump talking about floating the idea of buying Greenland, that's not just a nice idea. That's a mineral-rich territory. And is it up for sale? Well, GDP of Greenland, $3 billion. So actually, if you kind of do the math on that, you know, that's 1/700th of US GDP.
So they could afford it.
If you then factor in things like the fishing industries that it has, you put a price on it. I think there was an article in The Economist recently that put a price on Greenland of about $50 billion, mm-hmm. which is roughly a fifth of the annual US defense budget, something like that. It sounds like a crazy news story. That becomes a strategically viable idea, not just for mineral access, but it would give President Trump that strategic closeness to Russia, which would again allow it to have a more dominant power position in the world. Remember what I said at the start? This is about access to future resources. So everything that's playing out here is about how countries and territories have access to the resources it needs. So those resources will come from different places. The minerals in our cell phones will probably come from Ukraine mm-hmm. once a peace deal is done, not from China.
You mentioned resources and you yep. mentioned minerals, you mentioned energy. That leads me on to thinking about sustainable procurement.
Yep.
What does it mean for sustainable procurement?
This is really interesting because on the one hand, you have President Trump saying that it is rejecting the sustainability movement. So drill, baby, drill, going back to fossil fuels. And you have the response from environmental lobbies saying that is not a good thing.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, if you restrict imports to the US, you naturally reduce the impact of human impacts in particular by sourcing from perhaps parts of China, other parts of the world where human rights issues are there. So there is the odd thing that by doing that, you're actually improving sustainability because you're trying to bring manufacturing into a territory where there are better labor laws, better control over the labor laws and compliance. So you naturally get rid of some of the impacts of sourcing from low-cost countries.
If I was a CPO,
yeah.
what would I be doing right now apart from having sleepless nights and thinking this is going to seriously affect not just my input prices, but my output pricing and everything that goes along with it as well?
Well, this is a really good point. And I think CPOs have been a bit beaten up and battered over recent years. And I think if any CPO feels under attack by the executive board, then that company is not getting it right because this is a company problem. This is going back to some fundamental make-buy decisions in terms of where we source something. So the first is you've got to make this a company problem. It depends where your company is. So if you're a CPO in the US, you've got to have people all over looking at your supply chains, looking at those suppliers, being prepared and starting to look at how you renegotiate the contracts and revisiting that make versus buy decision. Outside the US, what is the risk? What is the new opportunity? That's the stuff you need to be doing. Agility is key here. So right now, CPOs shouldn't be betting on any long-term commitment mm-hmm. because things could change tomorrow. And any commitment needs to be made with the rest of the organization. If you're a CPO waiting for that AI magic button that's going to do everything with a piece of tech, you are going to be dead in the water because that is not going to solve this right now. Right now, you need brilliant procurement people with talent who can do category management and get in there and figure out a new category strategy. They've got to know how to do this, know how to apply the tools, and they've got to get in there and figure out what the new strategy is. If you're trying to do this with an AI bot, you're going to be dead. You need to be looking at the relationships you have and you need to be driving, you know, we're back to the good old-fashioned strategic procurement skill set here, supplier relationship management. You need advanced negotiation skills and people getting ready to go and do whole new negotiations, some of them quite tough. You need to be putting risk management top of the agenda. I said PESL earlier. Do a PESL tool for every supply chain, every supplier, and look at it once again every week until we get out of this stuff. And scenario modeling. AI can help with that bit mm-hmm. as well.
Obviously, I mentioned about CPOs.
Yeah.
But of course, and you said it depends on where you are. It also depends on what you're doing and what industry you're in.
Yeah.
And only in recent days has the wine industry been, I'm going to just use the term threatened, with a very large tariff mm-hmm. on wine going into the United States.
Yeah.
That industry doesn't typically have CPOs. It may have consortia, but they would consist of small to medium sized businesses. Obviously, there are some big brands amongst there, but it's mostly made up of smaller entities. What should they be thinking?
The smaller entities entities in terms of the producers, yes, but they'll be aggregators. So in terms of exporting that to the US, there'll be aggregators that are doing that and making that stuff happen. And in terms of wine production, it's hard to do anything with those costs because you don't have too many suppliers. You know, you're running the operation, you know, you're buying some stuff in. So you can't really drive that much sort of cost reduction. So for the wine industry, the reality is if the cost of buying a bottle of wine in the US is now going to be 200% higher than what it was before, is whether your wine's going to attract people to buy or choose product, something else instead of that. Don't really know, but very little those small producers can do other than try and find new markets for what they're doing or differentiate their product in some way so it still remains attractive at a higher price point.
I want to go back to a topic that you raised earlier in our conversation, and that's, of course, the very important issue between Ukraine and also in Gaza as well. We've seen the US taking the lead in ending the wars in Ukraine and Gaza. What does that mean for procurement?
Again, there's a bigger picture here. It would be fantastic to end those wars. Let's be clear about that, to have peace. But this is more than a peace agenda. This is, once again, access to resources, because Ukraine is resource rich. On a previous podcast, we talked about why did Russia invade Ukraine? And we talked about access to resources as being one of them. So actually how this plays out is about doing the right deal for resources more than anything else. But what it also means is more defense spend, because what we have seen with some of the conditioning at a global level, President Trump say, I'm threatened to pull out of NATO, which has compelled Europe to say, we now need to step up and fund
more.
And all of that was a strategic planned approach, because people think these things are coming out randomly. This whole thing is like a giant chess game. And that was part of it, to compel Europe to increase defense spend. So Europe's going to increase its defense spend. The UK has and will continue to do that more. The US is going to increase defense spend. And this isn't just typical traditional defense in terms of missiles and ground combat stuff. This is latest generation high-end tech stuff as well. So we're going to see defense spend going ballistic. That's going to be the next growth industry. But with that becomes even more demand on some resources that are already scarce. Some of those that are used in the construction industry, steel, aluminium, but also some critical metals, things like beryllium, chromium, tungsten, germanium. Most of the tungsten, interestingly enough, now comes from China. It used to come from Russia. We get most tungsten from China. So we're going to see this huge increased demand for some of those critical things, and that's going to create new supply chain challenges as well. But we're going to see huge, huge growth in defense moving forward.
Now, again, I want us to put aside the news agenda, because I think it's fair to say what we see and what we read is often edited to a certain extent, and also common opinion and what people think of the individuals behind this. I want you to theorize on the playbook that President Trump has in front of him right now, and look at this as an overall negotiation tactic. A friend of mine has moved to the US, and she sees a lot more coverage and interviews with President Trump. And she was formerly not like her. And now she's like, he is really on the ball. She's seen him in interviews. And he's, quote unquote, what she said, he's as sharp as a button. Now, what can we learn here from negotiation tactics? And there's a big playbook in front of him. You've already mentioned about he's playing a long game here.
I love that. He's as sharp as a button, because whether you like him, love him, loathe him, whatever, the one thing he is smart, and his team around him are smart. And this is an orchestrated, planned negotiation. It's one big negotiation. Before I answer that, actually, we've got a really good Ask Jonathan. So I just want to get this question in. So let's go to the Ask Jonathan, then we'll come back and talk about that.
Okay.
And now it's time for this week's Ask Jonathan.
And today's Ask Jonathan, for today's The Procurement Show special, we have a President Trump question for our Ask Jonathan from Amina Patel in India, who writes, I have your book on negotiation, which I constantly refer to. And in your book, you talk about the two types of negotiation, value claiming and value creating. And I'd like to ask which of these would best describe Donald Trump's deal making And if so, what we can learn from this.
Okay, so just a little bit of context then. Thank you so much for your question there, Amina. So value claiming is where we have a pie and we are dividing the pie up and we're fighting over how much of a slice I get versus you. So there's only so much pie and what I give up, you get. What you give up, I get. So we're fighting over how we cut that pie in two. All right. Value creating is when we say, look, let's kind of roughly divide it, but let's not argue about how we split it. Let's work together to grow the pie, to grow the value on the table some more. Let's make it something so it's a bigger pie, so it doesn't really matter too much exactly where we divide it, because we're both going to do better. The kind of President Trump deal-making negotiation we are seeing is value claiming. It is hard value claiming, and it's typical merger and acquisition. Mm-hmm. He comes from that world. It's about doing a deal and getting as much of the pie as you can. That's what we're seeing. And that's why I talked earlier about the kind of world order that has been mm-hmm. shaken up yep. here. Because if that still existed, then the having to play nice in the sandbox would prevent the hard value claiming negotiating that we're seeing paying out. So one of the things that President Trump is gambling with here is those existing relationships and those existing dependencies on the rest of the world to get the bigger share of the pie. Is that going to work? Too early to tell. But it's very definitely value claiming, not value creating, and we'll see where that goes.
Okay, good answer again. What favourite pie, by the way? Sorry.
I think that was a chicken and mushroom.
Oh, yeah, mine's steak and other things. Yes, thank you very much for your question. If you've got a question that you'd like to ask Jonathan, here's how to get in touch.
Ask Jonathan. Email your question to jonathan@theprocurementshow.com. You might be part of the next show. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, leading the way to realise sustainability goals across the supply base.
And that is a really topical Ask Jonathan question there. So let's bring it back to what we were talking about before the Ask Jonathan, which is President Trump's negotiation tactics.
Yep.
What his playbook looks like and the methods that he's using.
Yeah. And so once again, this is a planned negotiation strategy. Everything you say is part of a planned series of actions to get to that outcome that President Trump is seeking. So power in negotiation comes from having alternatives. Mm-hmm. So what we're seeing is President Trump laying out scenarios, laying out bits of conditioning to say, I have a real alternative. You'll remember that a week ago or so, there was the news headline that the US has paused sharing military intelligence with Ukraine.
Yeah, which he soon backed down on. He soon went back
to... That's right. Yeah. And there was a lot of reaction to that. Whoa, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Actually, we know now that the intelligence didn't completely get paused.
Right.
So there was this global statement that it's being paused, but still the intelligence got through. When there was a real need, when there were strikes happening, mm-hmm. that intelligence still got through. So it didn't really quite get paused, but that was a bit of posturing to say, I have a real alternative here, and this is what's going to happen if you don't play. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're seeing those alternatives, those batteners being laid out in a way that compels the other side to do something. We've talked about the concession posturing. You know, I'm going to cut your arms and your legs off. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll just take your arm. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, thank you very much. You know, that's one of the main tactics that we're doing here as well. The threat to leave NATO has compelled Europe to increase defense spend. And those are just simple negotiation tactics, posturing, but it's worked very well. Some of the other tactics that we've seen, well, it's all the usual stuff. If we go back to that scene in the Oval Office where Vladimir Zelensky got a dressing down in the Oval Office, I'm not going to talk about what we think of that in any way, but I'm going to talk about it in a pure negotiation perspective. That was planned. Mm-hmm. I'm certain that was planned. What you saw is good cop, bad cop. So you had Vice President Vance taking the bad cop.
Yep.
And President Trump being the good cop. He drifted out.
And indeed the mediator.
And a mediator. He actually came out of character towards the end, which probably wasn't planned. But that's how that was set up. And Vladimir Zelensky was not prepared for that.
There's another layer there, which we often don't have in negotiation, and that's the eyes of the world upon them and the media fallout.
So even more opportunity to do that unannounced, and even more impact as a result of doing that. So one of the key takeaways there is you have to be absolutely prepared for someone to try and annihilate you in a negotiation. And that hadn't happened. Because actually what was playing out there was a simple set of crude tactics to be able to get power. And they worked in that scenario. And the response to that would have been to have been prepared for that and have a series of BATNAs, a series of alternatives, series of other positions that you could respond to as well. There's a lot of brinkmanship happening. I'm going to take this to the brink and compel people to do something. And we're seeing brinkmanship on a big scale. We're seeing the hot potato tactic. This is not my problem, it's your problem. So that's what America is doing to Europe right now. Here's the hot potato. You know, it's your problem, you sort it out. We're seeing a lot of decoy tactics, that it's about, perhaps it's positioned about one thing, but it's really about who controls the resources moving forward. And a lot of jam tomorrow here as well.
Sorry, a lot of what?
Jam tomorrow. Or for our US listeners, jelly tomorrow.
Okay.
So this is about, it's going to get good. We're going to do this painful thing now, and it's going to get good. Trust me, this will work.
His timing tactics, he'll often run things right to the very edge and throw things in at the last minute, especially with regards to the overarching topic of tariffs. But also, when you're using these tactics, how many times can you use them before your opposition, so to speak, is able to predict what you're going to do?
Normally, there's a limit, but I think when you're President Trump, you can probably keep using these things more than most people can. I think the other thing in terms of timing is, you know, back to what I said at the start, President Trump needs the economy to go downward to get interest rates down short term. Tariffs and the threat of tariffs will do just that. So we're going to see this period where things tank in the US. That's going to have ramifications across the rest of the world. And then something new is going to emerge from that. Now, maybe tariffs will actually be magically cut and deals will be done. And actually, if I were going to bet on it, I think that's what will happen. We're going to have a tariff war, but I think it could well be short-lived. But there'll be new terms of engagement with other countries to be able to come back from that. So I hope this will be a short-lived thing. But those two things are very much designed to run in parallel now, to get people to the table to do the deal. Back to the negotiation. A lot of this is about compelling other parts, other countries, other nations to come to the table and want to do a deal and be prepared to just give their arm up, as opposed to all of their limbs, to be able to create this kind of new world order. And back to the negotiation tactics, if we look at this in game theory, President Trump is playing chicken. You know, when you drive.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
That's what's happening. So that's going to happen for the next 6 months, maybe beyond. I think that game will switch to more of the game of stag hunt in time, where he'll want to come back to new relationships with chosen territories and partners to create a kind of new world order. But it will require the US to establish itself as a more powerful superpower with access to greater resources for the future and the basis of a stronger economy before it will let that happen.
My final question, at the moment on the scene, he's quite unique.
Yeah.
What do you think would be the situation if he has somebody opposite him who was similar in strategy and perhaps with the new Prime Minister of Canada being Mr. Carney, the former head of the Bank of England, who most certainly knows economics better than a lot of people in this world, he's probably got a bit of a situation there on his hands. How do you think he's going to play?
I'm really interested to see what Mark Carney does once he sort of hits the ground running, because he's going to think about what are the strategies that I need to take to protect Canada, to defend Canada, to ensure that Canada's economy doesn't plummet. The hard reality here is, whilst there's been a falling out, the best outcome for both parties is to do a deal. And that's the reality of it, because the alternative is a long, hard slog and is going to affect everybody. And Mark Carney will know that, but he will also have some demands within that as well.
Excellent. Right. Really good. Really insightful conversation.
I do need to credit a bunch of people, because I've tried to make sure that I'm being fair and have got as much facts and data in this. I need to credit everybody at The Economist that informs me of this stuff a lot. Probably one of the best things you could read right now to understand the geopolitical situation. Owen Atmos, Darshini David, Simon Jack, Natalie Sharman and Laura Bicking at the BBC for all their incredibly insightful articles that have helped with this. Dan Waterman, XL Currencies, Rhys Herbert, Senior Economist in Lloyds Bank Corporate, all of whom their work I have drawn on to be able to do this podcast.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for taking us through everything that's happening with the Gaza tariffs at the moment. No doubt we'll probably revisit this topic in about, I don't know, a week.
A week's time. It will all have changed by then.
You've been listening to The Procurement Show. Contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com. Connect with us on LinkedIn, search for The Procurement Show, and visit us at theprocurementshow.com. You can also WhatsApp us on +44 7396 939933. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, transforming procurement with exceptional tools and advanced training. Produced in the UK by Fresh Air Studios. The Procurement Show is copyright Positive Purchasing, all rights reserved.
Strategic thinking, category management, negotiation, SRM, sustainable procurement.
Imagine if the skill set your team needs could happen at the flick of a switch. At Positive Purchasing, we have 22 years' experience in building advanced procurement and negotiation capability. With our unique skills assessment and tailored learning and development programs, it's no wonder we're the partner of choice for big companies the world over. Ready to switch on procurement capability that makes an impact in your business? Contact Positive Purchasing today to find out how.